Hey, y'all, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. Today, I have Dr. Priya, who is a licensed naturopathic doctor, and she is just incredible. I found her on Instagram, and I became instantly obsessed with the knowledge and wisdom that she shares. As you guys know, that's my main focus, educating and giving you guys information on how to control your own bodies and heal yourselves, and she does just that as well. So, Dr. Priya, thank you so much for taking your time to come on my podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me and for the warm welcome too. I really appreciate that. I just love being able to educate and empower each person because, as I'm sure you know, I feel like there's so much education that's lacking when it comes to health and wellness. And I know that people just want to learn more and be more in tune with their bodies and know what to do to help themselves.
Let's be real. It is a very much complex, hard to read situation in this world now with everybody having their own opinions, do this, do that, and Google and you name it. So really good to have trusted resources that people can run to. So I would love just to briefly hear what made you want to be a licensed naturopathic doctor.
Yes. I think it's so interesting because most people that end up in fields like this, where they focus in on holistic health, almost always have their own history of a lot of health things that went wrong that inspires them to want to learn more. So that's how I decided I wanted to become a naturopathic doctor. When I was in my early 20s, I had a lot of different health issues that popped up, ranging from gut health to hormones to anxiety and panic attacks. And they all happened pretty close to one another. Like, it just felt like I woke up one day and my health completely had tanked. And I just remember feeling really frustrated and disappointed in the services I was getting from my doctors. No one was really talking about what was actually going on with me. It was more of just a take this or like take that medication, this will help. And nothing really helped. So I actually ended up dropping out of pharmacy school because I realized that I was not happy with the field that I was in and like the path I was on. And I, at that point, had started doing what I'm sure everyone does. I started Googling and taking my lifestyle more seriously and on diet. And I saw such a tremendous change there that I knew that I wanted to go down a more holistic path.
Well, here you are in a holistic path, not only helping yourself, but helping others. So that's huge. And it's a great testimony. Now, when it comes down to working with people, what would you say your favorite thing is before we dive into some topics? What's your favorite thing to help with?
My favorite thing to help with, honestly, is helping people feel energized. I think that is the one thing that everyone just automatically benefits from the most, is just feeling like you have the threshold to go through your day to day without feeling like you are completely tanked by the end of the day and you can't carry on or do things that you enjoy. So whenever I get to work with someone and one of the things they tell me is my energy's improved so much, it just makes me so happy because I know having that energy can allow so much space for someone to be able to do things they enjoy on a daily basis, which gives so much more back to your health and your mental health as well.
I love that. So I think that's a great conversation starter. And you guys, she is just fabulous. I didn't give her any outline. I'm like, okay, we're just going with the conversation here. So let's talk about energy. Why does somebody and why would somebody have low energy in their lives?
There are so many reasons, and it's so hard to pinpoint just one. I always like to start with the foundations of health. So we're really looking at diet. Like, is there nutrient deficiencies that could be causing this? And when it comes to diet, examining how is someone's diet impacting their blood sugar? Like, if you're eating a diet that's very carb heavy and it's causing spikes and drops in your blood sugar, that's going to cause irregular energy levels. Then of course we have to talk about sleep and if you're moving your body and what you're doing for self-care. But there are so many people that it goes beyond just the basics, and we have to get into the nitty-gritty of, is there a hormone imbalance? Is there something going on with the gut? Does the mitochondria need more support? Are there environmental toxins? So really, I feel like there are so many things that can contribute to low energy, and it does end up becoming such a personalized topic where we have to peel back the layers and identify what could be a driver for someone.
I love that. Peel back the layers with the onion. It's kind of like an onion effect too. Like, the more you see, the worse it gets. And the more you realize, oh wow, there's a lot going on here. Yeah. I love that you first mentioned these dietary and these lifestyle factors. So we have dietary stress. lack of nutrients, low quality, poor diet, the blood sugar control. You nailed it there. A lot of people, they don't think about that and they don't pair their carbohydrates with a fat or a protein and they have blood sugar imbalances and wonder why they're fatigued. So very important there. And I was really excited to have you on today too, to discuss more things like gut health. And you guys, you are not what you eat. You are what you digest and absorb. So that's a huge factor in a underlying hidden factor that people don't even think about is gut infections, gut dysbiosis, or leaky gut, heightened intestinal permeability can really cause major fatigue issues too. So I'll let Dr. Priya talk about the, is there a particular, there's so much we could talk about today. Is there a particular gut infection that you say causes fatigue for the most part? Because I know for me, it's candida for many.
I was going to say candida and you know what? I have a history of candida too. So it's
Candida buddies.
Yep. And it's one of those where I feel like, at least for me, once you have it, you have to be very mindful because it's an opportunistic infection. So it could pop its head back up down the road, even if you think you've healed from it, depending on what's going on with your life. So
let's talk about candida. Can you tell my listeners, what is candida? What are the symptoms of candida?
Yes. So candida is a opportunistic yeast. It lives in our GI tract. We all have a certain amount of it and it can, and it's beneficial in its own way if it's under a certain amount. But for a lot of people, what might end up happening is, let's say there's a co-infection with something else, like someone has H. pylori, or you go on antibiotics or hormonal birth control, or there's a lot of stress or alcohol in the picture, it creates this vulnerability in the gut where that candida can now flourish and go into overgrowth. And then what ends up happening is you have so many symptoms that could go along with it, including skin rashes, oral thrush, which is seen as a white patch on your tongue. You can have acne, brain fog, anxiety, irregular bowel movements, bloating, constipation, just a lot of crazy symptoms can come up. And for each person, it really is different. Like some people might have minimal symptoms. Some people might have a lot of symptoms. So I never fully, if someone has some symptoms that match up to it, we always want to do testing because just because you don't have a skin rash or like that classic oral thrush picture doesn't mean that candida can't be a part of the picture for you.
So glad you mentioned that because that chronic fatigue can be a huge candida thing. And it's not just because of the yeast in itself producing these toxins that overburden the liver or potential nutrient deficiencies, but in itself can alter the HPA axis and cause fatigue from an adrenal base level. So there's so many things candida can do. The reoccurring UTIs and yeast infections. And I see a lot of brain fog, really bad brain fog with candida. So I'm so glad we're talking about this because this can be a really bad opportunistic infection that not only can cause gut issues, but could also colonize other parts of your body.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we can see it, like you said, you can have chronic yeast infections. It could colonize itself in the oral cavity. So we really have to be mindful of first identifying what is the trigger for candida, because of course using antifungals is very helpful and going through the approach of gut healing. But if you never target what actually caused it to go into overgrowth, that creates room for it to either never fully heal or for it to come back again.
And I feel like you nailed it when you first talked about candida, when you were talking about the co-infections like the H. pylori or even SIBO, and you're talking about chronic stress, alcohol, high refined sugar intakes, like all these things can contribute to that overgrowth. So nailed it there.
Definitely. And this was an experience I had, and I think this one's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I actually found when I had candida, I was craving all the fermented foods. Like I wanted kombucha, I wanted sauerkraut, like all day, every day. And I think it's so interesting because we hear so much about how probiotic foods are so good for us. But I think in the case of candida, for me, it was directly feeding my candida overgrowth. So once I eliminated those for a little bit of time, I found that I was able to clear up my candida much more efficiently than when I was trying to do it with the probiotics in there.
Oh, that's so interesting. I know for me, I crave just sugar in general because it feeds it. Fermented foods, sugar, alcohol. Did you have any mold or mold toxicity issues?
I did not. Fortunately, I didn't.
Good. Oh my gosh. It becomes a big old demon.
Yeah. I did have H. pylori, which I think was one of the triggering factors for me. I also had a flare up of candida after I had caught COVID back in December 20, 2020, I believe it was. Yes, 2020. So that we know now that there's a big gut link there too. So I'm thinking there was a combination of things that happened all at once that created this space for Candida to go into overgrowth.
Now, I think we 100%, we're going to dive into it in a second. We could dive into diet and supplements for Candida, but I want to talk about, because you mentioned it earlier, the Candida flares that happen, and they're specific triggers like a COVID vaccine or stress. So let's talk about how this can happen again and again and how to keep it at bay.
Yes, absolutely. I think the most important thing is first identifying your pattern and identifying what was it that triggered my first flare. So for me, I think stress is a big, big part of the picture because as I shared, I have a history of anxiety and panic attacks. So I always have to try to work on my mental health and try to keep things in a good leveled out space, because when I get into a place of really high stress, my gut function tanks. So that is one of the biggest triggers for me. So I know part of the work I need to do for my gut health is to continuously try to prioritize my mental health and give my adrenals and my system the tools that it needs to be able to overcome stress and have more stress resiliency. But for someone else, it could be completely diet-based, where you're eating a diet that's really high in refined carbohydrates, or you're drinking a lot of alcohol, and that's creating room for the Candida. So identifying these things are so important. That way you could set yourself up for better success down the road to avoid flares.
Absolutely love that. And I see a lot of people who are mold toxic. So for my listeners, I had Candida, H. pylori, SIBO, all from my mold toxicity from suppressed immune system. And so if I go through, or I go into water damaged buildings, or if I'm in a water damaged type of home for a few days, that can cause a flare. And I also struggle, of course, with loving exercise, and overdoing your exercise or under recovering, that can trigger the flare as well. As a huge immune system and adrenal based connection with that.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because I think so many people do fall into the trap of overexercising, just given the nature of the world we live in, the messages we receive, especially as women. So I think that's a great point to bring out, because it's so important to give your body the rest that it needs, because it's when we're resting that we're able to do a lot of repair functions, including repair functions in our gut.
Yes, 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 yes. And it's rest and cortisol and adrenal issues and stress. Stress is real, or it's perceived stress. So please understand, just because you don't feel like you're stressed doesn't mean that your body is not in fight or flight mode and stressed out.
Yes. And another big piece of that too is stress goes beyond just mental stress. Like you've mentioned, there's also biological stress on the body. For example, if you are exposed to mold, like that is a stressor. You might not feel mentally stressed, but your body's very much stressed. Or if you have a diet that's not supporting your insulin levels and it's not supporting your cortisol, like that is a type of stress too on the body.
Mm-hmm. Poor sleep issues, insomnia, mitochondrial issues. And then of course we have emotional stresses, resentment, fear, anger, things that a lot of people don't think about. So yes, you're like my best friend. This is like back and forth. I freaking love it.
I love it too. We have good banter going on. I like
yes. So let's talk about how to get rid of Candida, because I know everybody's like, okay, I have all these symptoms. What do I do first? So do you want to walk through people? What are your suggestions when it comes down to a quote unquote, this is me with my fingers, quote unquote, Candida diet?
Yes. So of course we want to try to optimize the diet to a place where you are really removing refined carbohydrates. You want to remove those things because you don't want to be actively feeding the yeast. So when it comes to carbs, you kind of want to stick to more of the complex carbohydrates, the ones that are a little bit lower glycemic index, because you want to make sure that the way that you're eating is going to support the work that you're doing in clearing out the yeast. And of course, bringing into the mix that conversation again of identifying the trigger, addressing that. And then the next step would be to include an anti-candida protocol. So in my practice, I work with a variety of different antifungal herbs, as well as going through a full approach of first we remove, and then we're going to repair and re-inoculate and just work on optimizing the gut after we've done the removing of the candida, because you can't just take a bunch of supplements to remove the candida and then think that's going to be the end of it. You really need to go in there afterwards and support the gut in terms of its digestive function, making sure that you have healthy flora, making sure that you've healed the gut lining, because often candida can contribute to leaky gut, and that can cause a lot of symptoms on its own, including pulling at the immune system, which then turns into even more fatigue.
I love it. Yeah. It's not just kill. It's not just remove. We have to repair. We have to replace. We have to relax. And we have to re-inoculate. So the five R's, of course, but let's go back to diet a little bit. So you mentioned, of course, lower and no refined sugars. So we have no refined sugars. I like to say, and I want to hear your thoughts, going low carb could be very helpful, but no carb is not necessary. What are your thoughts?
I 100% agree with that. I think the stress of low carb is going to cause more issues than just doing a low carb diet.
And the whole goal is to optimize the diet and get as much variety as possible. We want to feed that microbiome. We want to feed your body. And going low carb in itself is a stressor on the body, a stressor on your hormones, and it becomes a vicious cycle.
Exactly. And then I'm so glad you said that, because what's one of the biggest triggers for candida? It's stress. So if you're putting yourself through a really stressful diet, you're going to end up having issues with clearing that candida out efficiently, because sure, maybe the diet isn't feeding the yeast directly, but you have all these other things in place now that can be contributing to the yeast staying in overgrowth.
Exactly. So I like to say, work with a practitioner, a clinician, a dietitian, a naturopath, somebody that can walk you through what is going to be the quote unquote candida diet that's best for you. Some people might be able to handle 150 grams of carbs. Other people, 200 grams of carbs. Other people may have to go to the 120, 130 grams of carbs. It really truly depends on how bad are their symptoms? How bad is their candida infection? What else is going on?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when it comes to things like this, gut health, there's so many layers to it, and you really have to know what you're doing, and you can cause more harm than good if you try to put yourself on protocols. Mm-hmm. So I always recommend working with someone, and you especially do want to get your gut tested and see what's going on in your gut microbiome, even if you suspect you have candida, because again, you can have something that's contributing to the candida, such as SIBO or H. pylori or parasites. So you want to make sure you're completely addressing everything that's going on in the gut.
Amen to that. And do you see people come to you who've done like candida-based protocols without even ever testing for candida? Because I do.
Yes, I do see that. And generally, it has not helped. It's always this type of scenario where I started feeling better for like a week and then my symptoms went back. And then they end up eliminating more or doing more intense things, but it ends up just being this vicious cycle of feeling better for a few days and then reverting back in symptoms.
It breaks my heart every time, because people are like, yeah, I spent all this money on this candida-based protocol. I'm like, did you test before? And they're like, no. I'm like, dang it. Oh, it's so frustrating for people. And then, yeah, it's really important to make sure that you are being test, don't guess. And then you are focusing on the treatment protocol that's going to be best for you. Two more things I just wanted to throw out for myself, just because I know it's very important to me as a clinician. I would say no fermented foods, and going as yeast free as you can be very helpful. So vinegars, those can be a big trigger. So I like to give my patients like handouts on things like that, but it can be very helpful when you're trying to get rid of candida.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I definitely, as I shared, going fermented free really helped me kick my candida. And I've seen it happen so often in my practice. And I have to say, especially because kombucha is one thing that people drink a lot of, you have to really examine the kombucha brand you're buying too, because a lot of them can actually have a lot of sugar in them. So you think you're taking something that's helping, and it could actually make things worse because you have the fermented foods that can feed the yeast, but then you also have so much sugar in there as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yes. Jam packed with sugar. I was at the grocery store the other day and I was like, oh my goodness, this is basically just like drinking straight up sugar.
Yep. Yep. I'm not the biggest fan of kombucha. I'm not going to lie. It's not, I used to love it, but the more I've thought about it and the more I've looked into it, I'm not sure how much I love drinking kombucha.
Tell me more. What'd you read?
So in general, there's so many layers that you have to cross first to make sure you're getting a high quality product. So just starting from the very beginning, is the company that you're buying the kombucha from, are they testing the tea leaves for molds and heavy metals? A lot of companies don't, and a lot of companies don't share their certificate of analysis. So you don't know what that starting material quality was. And then you have to look at how much sugar they're adding, what type of sugar they're adding. You have to look into things such as, okay, in what type of containers are they batch producing these? Are they in plastic? Are they in stainless steel? And then even looking at the bottle quality, like, is it a glass bottle or is it in a plastic bottle? So there's so many different layers to it that at this point I'm like, I don't think I need kombucha. I think I can get fermented foods elsewhere.
Oh my gosh, so much to it. This certificate analysis, certificate of analysis thing is huge. And you guys, please know you can reach out to a company and request it. And if they say no, they suck.
Yeah, that's kind of your answer right there. If you ask a company for their certificate and they ignore you or don't respond, that should kind of tell you that maybe there's something in there that they don't want you to see, because companies that have a great standard of quality have no issues whatsoever with sharing that with you.
Mm-hmm. Heavy metals too, very important. And just to throw that out there, this out there, because it's really gross, companies can elect to not do heavy metal testing, which is gross. So if you can, choose companies that elect to do the heavy metal testing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
So let's talk about some of those herbs, those antifungals that are very helpful for getting rid of candida. And I just want to, again, say, like our doctor said, we're going to stay away from just killing and we're going to support the body too. But I want to hear, what are your favorite antifungals?
Oh, there's so many beautiful ones out there. So some of my favorite ones when I'm thinking about addressing candida include, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher this. It's this, it's by Biocide, and it's like their Olaplex. I don't know if I said that right, but they have a wonderful supplement that I think is spot on. I usually do that in combination with some other antifungal herbs like Oregon grape or like golden seal. I think putting in something like a ginger can be beneficial too, depending on the person's physiology and if they would benefit from having a little bit of increase in their gastric motility, because ginger helps speed up our migrating motor complex, which can be helpful if someone's experiencing constipation with the candida. So that's kind of the approach I take. I take it pretty slow at first, because I'm sure you know that if you go really heavy hitting with a bunch of different herbs or really high dosages, people can have some really uncomfortable die-off reactions to start with.
Yeah.
So I like to start people off really slow with that biocidin, and then over time, just add in specific tinctures that are antifungal to help support the process, and also rotate through different things so that people aren't getting used to a certain type of herb and now we're not making any progress.
Absolutely love that. For many people, and I do the GI map, so I see a lot of low secretory IgA or lack of digesting their foods, low elastase, low bile or high steatocrit, and that can be an issue. If you can't digest your food and absorb your nutrients, that's the first thing we have to address. Or if you have intestinal permeability, that's the first thing that we have to address before we even focus on any killing. So very glad you mentioned that. I would say my favorites, I have a lot of favorites, and I get so angry when like they're out of stock. I'm like, how dare you? Like,
yes,
but I absolutely love caprylic acid, salicylic acid, oil of oregano, berberine, grapefruit seed extract. Monolaurin's a great one too, but there's a lot of good mixtures. I know they make that GI microbe X. There's candibactins, there's the biocidin, there's candidoid. There's so many different like blends. And I just want to make sure people know, don't just treat this yourself, because it's the dosage that matters too. It's not just what you're taking, it's how much you're taking and the synergistic effect with other antimicrobials that matters.
Yes, I 100% agree with that. And to go back to your original point of the lowered gut immune function, you really want to make sure first you're in a place where you're able to detox. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not in a place where your detox pathways are open, you're going to feel pretty awful putting in antifungals, because then you're just killing off and you're not getting it out of your system. So you want to make sure that the liver is well supported, that you are having daily bowel movements, that you're sweating, you're doing all the things to make sure that the toxins can leave your system efficiently.
Amen to that. And it's not just like, oh my gosh, let's support our liver. It's let's support our lymphatic system too. We got to move all that through our body.
Yes. Yes. What are some of your favorite ways to support the lymphatics? Because I feel like they're so overlooked for people.
I absolutely love just overall walking and dry brushing. Those are my top favorites. I'm a big fan of lymphatic massage, but that's expensive. But that would be one of my favorites, because I feel like it's so relaxing. Have you done one of those before?
I have, and they're so wonderful. And I wish it was something I could do like once a week, but I agree with you. The price can definitely add up, but they're so incredible. They feel so good.
They are. And for my listeners that maybe don't know what it kind of is. We're basically small, tiny strokes. We're trying to get that blood to the heart to be spread throughout the body to help move that lymph through our body. And so those people, they really do. It's really weird. It's kind of like, oh, like, am I even getting a massage? But I fall asleep. But once you get it done once, you can kind of do a little bit of it by yourself, at least like towards your upper body.
Yeah. Yeah. You can pick it up pretty easily. And it's kind of similar to the same type of stroke. Like you would follow the same stroke lines as you would with dry brushing too. So once you kind of get the hang of how to move lymph, you can definitely do it on your own. And it could be a part of the, your like day-to-day routine that you do. So I do a little bit of it around my neck and in my face specifically, because I hold so much tension and congestion in those areas. And I swear if I go a couple weeks and I forget to do it, the next time that I do it, once I start getting that movement going, I usually end up having like a small headache that day. Cause I'm like, okay, I could feel everything that was stagnant. That's finally moving now. And it's kind of making me feel a little crummy at first, but in the long run, it ends up being better.
That's me whenever cause I used to get massages quite frequently, but I've been really bad about not getting them and just like waiting 3 or 4 months to get them. And then I get a massage and the next day I'm like, I've been hit by a truck. Because things are just recirculating. I'm like, I thought I was going to feel better.
It's good. Sometimes you have to feel worse before you feel better. Right. That's one thing I learned in school. And it really is true, because there sometimes is a healing crisis when you start to get things moving. It doesn't always feel great to get certain things out of your system, but you almost always by the end of it, you end up feeling better, and it's for the best.
Now we mentioned the die-off. Can you tell my listeners a little bit about what that die-off is and what that means?
Yeah. So die-off is essentially when you're killing off this candida or whatever else you're trying to kill off in the gut, they can release their own toxins. So candida has a particularly nasty type of die-off, in my opinion. So do parasites. If there's high levels of bacteria overgrowth, those are going to have die-offs. And so what I say it feels like, what it's felt like for me is like, it feels like you're about to come down with the flu, but you never do.
Right.
That's kind of what it feels like. You kind of have like that lethargic feeling. You feel under the weather. You might have a headache. You just really feel like you're about to get sick. It just doesn't happen. And a having an intense die-off reaction isn't necessarily a good thing, because that indicates two things. One, your drainage pathways might not be fully open. So you might be just reabsorbing a lot of toxins in your system. Or two, you might be moving too fast through the kill-off phase and it's too much for your body to handle. So a little bit of die-off can be expected. But in my opinion, if you're getting into the territory of like, you feel really bad, like it's pretty intense, that's a clear sign that you're doing too much too quick. And maybe scale it back a little bit and do more support to your system.
Yeah, die-off does not feel good. It's supposed to be very mild. And I like to always say that's the importance of a quote unquote, a phase one. So supporting your immune system, supporting your liver, your detox, your drainage, your lymphatic pathways prior to going into the kill off, like we've discussed. And I'm glad you mentioned with the parasites too. Parasites have their own weird little die off. Yeah. Have you done any like parasite cleansing yourself?
I haven't done one on myself. I really want to, honestly. I feel a little nervous. I'm not going to lie.
I don't blame you.
But I've been prepping my system over the last few months. I've been doing a lot of just like general lymph and liver support, because my goal is that I want to do a parasite cleanse most likely in May is my goal.
Ah, well, I'm happy to give you any encouragement. I know for me, I really struggled with getting rid of my candida because I had hidden parasites and they were all hiding together in a biofilm, which for you guys is kind of like a sticky net in your intestines. And blasting through that biofilm, getting rid of that parasites allowed me to get rid of my candida. But when you have that die-off from the parasites, you can also release a lot of trauma. Emotional trauma. And that is the weirdest thing to pass. Like all of a sudden I'd be just like crying. And I was like, oh my gosh, why do I just want to like cry and be alone? Like that's normally me. And then as soon as like I pooped, it was like gone. I was like, what? Wow. This is amazing. I went to therapy. No, but it's really fascinating.
Did you ever see any in your stool, or were they all microscopic for you?
Oh, I did. Yeah. It was disgusting. Anybody that listens to my podcast now, like they know about my poop life. I'm like, oh, we're friends.
See, that's, I think, what's holding me back the most. I I'm scared to see him in my stool. I know I'm going to see him and it scares me, but I'm like, okay, no, I put people on parasite cleanse all the time. I just step it up and do it myself.
I did it out of just like experimentation because I'm a weirdo, but yeah, I definitely recommend trying it. But I mean, die off, you guys, can feel like flu-like before I get like down the rabbit hole of talking about parasites. Die off can feel like flu-like, but it also could just be a little bit of brain fog, a little bit of a headache, anger, irritability, or like I mentioned, the crying and the trauma releasing.
Yep. And I'm bringing us back to the parasites again. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
A little bit more about this emotional component to it, because that's a first that I actually have not heard. And I'm really? So fascinated by that. Yeah.
So I originally heard it from Dr. Jess. Have you heard of her?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. So her, when I had it, I hadn't heard of it yet. And then she posted it about it. And I was like, that's exactly what happened. And then when my clients have done the parasite cleanses, they have had the same thing happen to them. And so it really made sense to me harboring that trauma as more of a emotional kind of like cortisol release when you're getting rid of those pathogens. And for me, I think there's definitely a lot of trauma in my body, but I could tell when I passed those that I was releasing a good amount.
Wow. I see now.
I want like more science behind that, because that's like really not sciencey.
No, here's the thing with parasites too. I feel like when I was in school, I did not learn very much about them beyond the basics of you have like these parasites, and usually when you have them, you know right away they're associated with food poisoning, mm-hmm. that type of spiel about them. And we learned the classic 3-day parasite stool test. If something shows up, it shows up. If it doesn't, right. you're here. But now we're learning more and more that, okay, that's not always the case with parasites. They don't always show up on stool tests, and they like to stay hidden, and they can mm-hmm. be a part of someone's microbiome and you have no idea. I see it a lot in people too, who have chronic gut issues that don't seem to resolve no matter what we do. I'm like, there's gotta be a parasite at play here.
And oh yeah.
And I'm very interested to see more and more information come out about the science behind parasites, because I feel like there's just not that much data on them yet.
And I know even some practitioners are still stuck in saying Blastocytis hominis is a non-commensal pathogen, but there's multiple studies that show that blasto can induce intestinal inflammation and be an autoimmune trigger, especially for Hashimoto's disease.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think that I feel like, honestly, we've learned so much more about the gut within the last decade, I would even say. So it's always fascinating to me when people stay really strictly stuck to old ways of thinking when it comes to gut health, because mm-hmm. I feel like we're just barely now scratching the surface. There is so much we still don't understand about the gut and how it functions, and just the extent of how much it can affect everything. I mean, we have a pretty good idea of it, but I feel like the science and the studies just haven't fully caught up yet. So I think staying really married to an old way of thinking about gut health is really doing a disservice to a lot of practitioners.
Oh, I fully agree. I mean, there's new probiotic studies every single day, new gut studies every single day. So the most important thing is just for any clinician or any practitioner or anybody in general, being open-minded to new science. That's how you are a true scientist and health professional.
I agree with that. And I think so many people just don't keep up with the science, honestly, because there's a lot of people that discredit parasites being an issue, or even people that still to this day don't believe candida is an issue, or that the gut microbiome makes that much of an impact. Mm. Even when going to Western medicine or conventional doctors, I feel like you talk about gut stuff and it's just completely brushed over.
I know I've had multiple clients that they brought their GI map because, okay, so you guys, when it comes down to clearing out candida, you can go down the antifungal approach antimicrobial wise, so natural ones, but you can also use an antifungal like nystatin, diflucan, more pharmaceutical approaches. So some of my clients, they get to hear both options. Some of them choose to do the pharmaceutical because it could be cheaper, has of course other side effects, but always an option. So when they go and they ask for a medication, sometimes the doctor says, you know what? We don't need to worry about this. This is nothing. I don't trust this test. And that to me is, I mean, that's medical gaslighting, and that's dismissing, and that's not okay. And that's not looking at the new science. So it just makes me angry.
I totally agree with you on that. I've had so many people tell me that their doctors don't believe in the validity of the GI maps or even looking at stool testing beyond just like looking at classic pathogenic bacteria. They just like don't look at overgrowth or anything like that.
It's disgusting. But back to die-off, I just wanted to throw in, anybody that has done candida cleanses or any cleanses in general, there are some things you could do to help support the die-off, like the dry brushing and the rebounding and the sauna therapy, all that type of stuff. But also binders can be very helpful. You got to be careful because they bind your nutrients. But I'm sure, Dr. Puri, you also use binders as well.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's such an important part of the whole remove phase because you want to make sure you're binding up everything and excreting it. And you do want to make sure that the binders you're using are the correct ones. This is a little bit more specific, I would say, if you're working with molds. I'm sure you know certain species of molds have different affinities.
Right. Yes. Binders.
Whereas you could use a more general one when it comes to candida for the most part. Like I use a combination one. I really like Cellcord's biotoxin.
Oh, I love them.
So yeah, there's some good ones out there.
I love GI Detox by Biotics. I love the Cellcore binder. Quicksilver has a great ultra sensitive binder. I just find that the binders, they're always easier to take when they're not a powder. I don't know why they do powder for so many. I'm like, that's so hard for people to take and they taste like crap.
I know. Most people are not happy with the powdering forms.
And then one more thing I want to throw out are probiotics to help with getting rid of candida and supporting the gut immune system. So I love me some Saccharomyces boulardii.
Yes. So
yeast probiotic, yeah. But also anti-yeast. That one would be my favorite in addition to Megaspore. How about you?
Yeah, I love Saccharomyces boulardii. I really particularly like the Orthobiotic by Orthomolecular product because it has like that blend of Saccharomyces and Lactobacillus and Bifido. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice all-encompassing one. And I don't want to say gentle, that's not the right word for it. I guess it's a pretty well-received probiotic. Most people take it and feel great with it immediately. Whereas I know there's some trial and error with other probiotics sometimes. I really like Megaspore too. I think they have some phenomenal products.
Have you used Orthospore?
I haven't. Is that by Orthomolecular too, Orthospore?
Yes. It has some immunoglobulins, which are, for my listeners, really good for your secretory IgA and your gut lining. I like that one too.
Amazing. I'll have to check that one out. They're always coming out with new products that are just,
I know, right?
I love that brand. They're really doing a great job with the gut health supplements.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They're amazing. And there's a lot of different brands, you guys, but when it comes down to just whatever you're doing, make sure you're using your practitioner, third-party tested supplements. Very, very important.
Yes. I 100% agree with you on that.
Awesome. Well, I have some exciting things to share, you guys, because Dr. Priya has some great things that she does and she is doing. So do you mind telling my listeners what they can do and how they can help themselves and how they can work with you?
Yes, of course. So my one-on-one care is always open. So if you're interested in working one-on-one together, whether it's on gut health or hormones or anything else that you want to reach in terms of your health goals, you're always welcome to book a discovery call with me. It's about 30 minutes. We go in depth into your gut health or your overall health, and we can talk about what direction makes the most sense for you. And then we can take it from there. I also have a new online course that's just come out. It's called Master Your Gut, where I walk you through all the ins and outs of gut health, along with what I use in my practice, some case studies in there. So you get a really comprehensive overview of how to master your gut.
I absolutely love that. Oh my gosh. You're just a breath of fresh air. Absolutely love chatting with you. This has been so much fun. I was just pulling up your Instagram, which people can probably hear right now. So that's Dr. Priya, Dr.PARIA. And I will make sure everything is in the links in the descriptions. Is there any last piece of advice that you would like to give my listeners that can make them truly conquer any fatigue or health issues?
I would just like to say, follow your intuition. If something feels wrong in your body, listen to that voice, find a practitioner that will listen to you and work with you, and find someone that's a good match. It may not be me, it may not be your current doctor, but just find someone who feels like they are a good match for you and will listen to you and validate you, because you deserve to feel your best. We all do.
Amen to that. You got to feel comfortable and supported and encouraged. That's the most important thing with working with anybody.
Yes, definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, for sharing your wisdom and your knowledge here. And I hope you and my listeners have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much for having me.